let's start at the beginning. Talk to me a little bit about how and when this group got its start.
Well, we have to go way back. It's starting to sound like a long, long time ago now, but it was 1977, and it was centered around the Ontario College of Art in downtown Toronto. And I was going there, and a friend of mine, we were both doing experimental music there, and both working in what was called the Sound Lab, which was a very basic little recording studio. And he asked me, this is David Miller, and he said, do you want to start a band? And the climate of the time, as you probably know, all over, you know, London, New York, and other urban centers, the same thing was going on. A lot of bands were forming that were, you know, completely different from what the mainstream artists were like. And I thought, oh, yeah, cool. That's a cool idea. And I didn't realize how terrified I'd be when we actually had to go on stage. But I did get over that. And then you, Martha, you started rehearsing with us pretty soon after that, didn't you?
Yeah, a couple of weeks, I think. I think I missed the first get-together that you and David had. I came in on the second one.
Right.
And I'd played in a band with him previously, so I had a bit more experience in bands.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about this name, and I'm sure you've been asked this before, Martha and the Muffins. Now, I get the Martha parts. In fact, at one point, I think you had two Marthas in the band, with Martha Ladley from, I think it was 78 to 80, if my research is correct. But the muffin part, that's got me a little bit stumped, so talk a bit about that.
Well, we were practicing throughout the whole spring and summer of 77. We were doing a lot of, like, working on songs and getting various band members, you know, trying various people and different people were coming in, and our first show was the Halloween party at the Ontario College of Art that October. And all throughout the summer, we were arguing about what names we should, you know, or what name we should call, and everybody was bringing in lists of names, and nobody liked anybody else's name. And one guy who was in the band very briefly, who was in an original member of the Diodes, Dave Clarkson, mm-hmm. He suggested, I think, the Muffins. Is that right, Martha?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. So he said, and, you know, we all thought it was kind of cool because it was the antithesis of all the punk, like the hardcore punk names. And, you know, we weren't a punk band. I mean, when I listen back now, we certainly had punk elements. But at the time, we thought, oh, yeah, that's cool, the Muffins. Like, and I remember David sometime later saying something about how it was kind of a feminist response. Now, whether or not that's true, who knows? But we had to put a name on the poster for the Halloween dance. So we went, okay, we'll just call it Martha and the Muffins. And at this time, Martha here was still the only Martha. And we went, yeah, and then we'll change it. You know, we'll come up with a way better name. And it never happened.
Yeah, it put too much emphasis on me. You know, I think that was a mistake. But, you know, people like the name, and, you know, there are a lot of silly band names out there, so we're just one of them.
Now, this question's for you, Mark, as the one who wrote Echo Beach in 79 and, of course, became your biggest hit. Is the song based on an actual place? And if not, where did you get the name from?
No, it wasn't based on an actual place. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, you know, as soon as the song got widely known, people from all over the world were basically, well, when people wrote letters, they would, at that time, they wrote letters saying they knew where it was and that it was based on the Echo Beach in Australia or wherever. And which was really interesting because, you know, you write a song and then it kind of comes back at you in ways that you couldn't predict. But in the ensuing decades, it's become kind of a cultural meme. There's like all sorts of things all over the world named after it, like hotels in Zanzibar and Bali, a German dub label, an Irish racehorse.
Wow.
We have a list somewhere, but there's like about 20 things.
But how did you come up with the name Echo Beach?
It just it kind of just popped into my head. It was one of those funny things. It was like the guitar riff, it just kind of came into my hands. I went, oh, that's kind of neat, you know. And the other, well, I guess the other part of the story now that I'm remembering is that a friend and I went down to the shoreline of Lake Ontario and one night, and that's where the lyrics for the second verse kind of came from. But maybe I was thinking of an Echo Beach down there too. I mean, not that there was one at the time, mm-hmm. but you know, some of these things as songwriters, you have no explanation of why they came into your head. And people often talk about being conduits for music, and you know, it's not a bad way of describing it.
The tricky thing is getting out of bed when you have one of them, have an idea in the middle of the night.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't ignore it.
Now, Martha, talk to me a little bit about what those Echo Beach days were like for the band. I mean, as you saw that song, you know, shoot up the charts. I mean, that must have been a pretty crazy time for you guys.
Yeah, we would get phone calls from England, from our label, Indisc, and they'd say, oh, it's number 62 this week. And then they call the next week, and oh, it's number 32, you know, and then they get right into the top 10. And it was very exciting, you know. And hearing your song on the radio for the first time is also extremely exciting, too.
Mm-hmm.
You go, hey, I'm on the radio. That's my voice. But
yeah.
It was also... because we had such success with the song, we were in England doing a promotion and doing some touring, and everybody was making such a fuss about us. You know, there were dinners that we'd have, and all the press would come, and they really made a big deal about it.
And
the venues that the crowd was really supportive. It was exciting. It was a very exciting time.
And you know, doing things like Top of the Pops and, you know, recording at the Manor Studios just outside of Oxford. I remember having a Mike Oldfield album, you know, in high school, and on the cover were pictures of the Manor. And I thought, wow, you know, would that ever be cool to go to a place like that? And, you know, when we were driving up when we did the first album there, I couldn't believe it. And not only that, like the three Irish Wolfhounds that were on this Mike Oldfield cover came bounding around the corner. So, it was like a weird dream.
Now, I'd like to attempt to get to the heart of the Martha and Muffins sound a little bit. Now, it's too easy to call you new wave, and you guys kind of alluded to this a bit, but I think there's more to it. So maybe talk to me about your influences and how would you describe your music?
Well, my influences were varied. You know, I love Motown, and I love the Beatles, and you know, straight pop music, and I also liked Roxy music and some weirder stuff like Brian Eno. And so it was a variety of things, but I did tend to lean towards the pop end of things, whereas the band had a wide variety of tastes, and I think that's what gave us our sound, is everybody brought in their own feel and their own likes in music. And we melded it all together, and it was our sound.
Well, certainly the early band, the original six, as you say, had a really wide range of musical interests. And, for instance, Andy Hawes, our original sax player, was, like me, kind of out of the improvised free-form world. And so he particularly brought that quality to the early band. But also, you know, over 40 years, I mean, we've had many band personnel changes, and we've explored, like, a lot of different styles. So, you know, certainly the first two albums had a definite feel about them because of the people on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when we went into the third, fourth, and fifth albums, we were moving through sort of more ambient stuff, and then into dance music. And then later on, you know, kind of almost like a weird country thing on one album. And so, you know, we've always liked exploring different musical genres. So I think people found us really hard to pin down. You know, they go, well, you're new wave. And I go, well, yeah, we were new wave, you know, between 77 and 81, maybe. Then, you know, a lot of it we couldn't really classify. You know, was it shoegaze? Was it you know, punk funk, which I think, you know, some of it was. And
I think we're working with Dan Lanois and it's co-producing, starting with This Is the Ice Age, had a big influence on our sound too, because he was willing to explore the production and the sound gathering process. You know, we had a lot more the palette was much wider.
Well, and that's, I mean, he's such an accomplished producer. I mean, what was it like to work with Daniel?
He came more out of like a roots background. He wasn't like an art musician at all, but to his immense credit, because he started working with us and Brian Eno at the same time, because we'd go into Grand Avenue Studios in Hamilton, and Eno'd be working there with Dan on, you know, one of the ambient records, and we'd be going in there. And I think the great thing about Dan is that he picked up stuff. And, you know, obviously, when you look at what he did, what he's done over the ensuing decades, like, it's an amazing body of work. And he allowed himself to be, to absorb a lot of influences that weren't part of his early background and maybe weren't natural to him. But he, right off the top, we could tell he was immensely creative. And so if I said, I want to get this feeling of despair by knocking a bunch of cardboard boxes down the stairs and then slowing it down 3 octaves. It wasn't like a lot of earlier engineers that went, oh my God, like, what is Mark up to now? He'd be already setting the mics up and be totally into it, you know? And that gave us, you know, as Martha said, like, there was a much wider palette of sounds that we were, you know, able to draw upon, and nobody seemed afraid of spending a long time just looking for sounds.
Well, and that kind of leads to this next question. In more than a few articles, I've seen this band referred to as groundbreaking. Now, that includes recording your first album, 1980s Metro Music, over in London, but also groundbreaking in the originality, diversity, and, you know, experimental nature of your music. What does it mean to you to be called groundbreaking?
Well, I think in a way, for me, I like that better than being popular.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can be both at the same time, that's great, you know, and there's certain bands that reached, like, I think of Talking Heads and Radiohead, where you're going, okay, these are like art college bands that, like, got way beyond the, you know, a certain level and actually made it into the mainstream. But, you know, I think when people say groundbreaking, I mean, I think often they mean these are people that follow them their own paths, you know, like, yeah, we have been associated with certain movements, certainly in the early days, the whole new wave thing, but I think, you know, when you have your own vision of what you want to do, you're not necessarily following what everybody else is doing, and by doing so, it seems groundbreaking. And, you know, we were interested in, like, new sounds. We're always trying to find new sounds, and it's a weird band because we love pop music, but we love noise. Often there were problems with our various record companies because we weren't like this predictable commercial enterprise. Like, you go, okay, so they're going to do another album that sounds like this album and keep, you know, people keep buying it. I mean, when we did This Is the Ice Age, that was a complete left turn.
I think it's in the songwriting as well. I think, you know, our songwriting, Mark and I did most of the songwriting, and we developed over the years, so each album we became a little more sophisticated in the songwriting, and I think maybe that's what people were referring to in groundbreaking.
Now, finally, let's talk a little bit about the newest album and your first album in over a decade, Marthology In and Outtakes, which I think came out last November. What compelled you to put out this type of album, and what has the response been?
Well, it was actually our manager, Graham Stairs' idea, who's been bugging us, I think, for years to do this. And he said, you know, you've got, I mean, first of all, we have a lot of stuff in our archives that nobody's ever heard. And some of the stuff that, you know, you hear on Marthology, we would occasionally go back and listen to it and go, hey, you know, that was a pretty good song. I mean, it never, you know, some of them never saw the light of day. Some of them had limited releases, but he kept saying, you know, you really should put something like this together. And I'm so glad we did, because I really think some of this stuff is the best, some of the best material we've ever done, and particularly with Martha's singing as well. And, you know, it's an eclectic album. There's a, because of the nature of it, where we've gone into the archives and it kind of covers a wide period of time in different styles. It's not like an album in the sense that you're being led from one thing to another, and it's, you know, there's an overall flow to it. Although, having said that, I think we worked really hard at getting the sequencing right, so it wasn't too jarring when you went from, you know, something like Summer of Song into, you know, Do You Ever Wonder? I mean, so we worked really hard on it. And, yeah, the reaction seems to have been very good. I mean, you know, it didn't go to number one or anything. For us, it's more like getting the work out and, you know, unlike a lot of occupations, we're just going to drop dead one day and then you won't hear any more music.
That sounds good.
What I mean is that we won't be, I don't think we'll be retiring, you know, quotation marks.
But, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't mean that, you know, that we're going to walk out the front door today and get hit by a meteorite or something.
Now, finally, what does the future hold for you? I mean, can we expect any touring or new music, or where are we at with that?
Well, there won't be any touring. I have a health issue.
Right.
I have Parkinson's disease, and it's limited my ability to be on stage and my singing as well. I mean, I managed to do studio work still and to do writing,
right,
which is great because I love writing. I love writing songs, and we've been writing songs with other artists, young artists mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And up and coming, and that's been very exciting. We're working on a project called Dazzlefield, and it's a collection of a group of women singers who are singing songs about breakups.
Yeah, it's a breakup album. The great thing about it is that they've all broken up with somebody, you know, recently, so their pain is fresh, and therefore they're writing really good stuff because they're close to it. So it's like the real thing, right? So, and each of the singer has a very, very distinctive voice. So we're I think we've got about four things done now. We'd like to get up to maybe six or seven and then release it. But
or an EP.
Yeah, an EP or an album. And then we've got, well, I have been working on an instrumental album for not consistently over 25 years, but I started it 25 years ago. And in the second year of COVID, which I guess is 21, I decided, like, if I don't, you know, resurrect it, it'll never be done. So I spent most of last year working on it, and it's all mixed now, and
what's
we're just mastering it.
What's it called, Mark?
It's called Garden Music, and it's based on common plant names.
Interesting.
Well, like Love Lies Bleeding, Blue Mist.
Johnny Jump Up.
Like
that one.
Yeah, like I basically picked common plant names that were evocative somehow and then intuitively worked on a instrumental approach to them. I'm really, really happy with the way it turned out. And it's not going to be for everybody, but you know, I'm thrilled with it, basically, and hopefully it'll be out soon.
And we hope to write enough new songs to put out a further Martha and the Muffins album. But Mark's been pretty busy with his garden music, so we haven't really got down to it yet.
The thing about Martha is that we've developed a whole bunch of studio approaches that get around her up and down periods with the Parkinson's, because it is an up and down thing. And it's basically regulated by drugs, right? So when she's in a good singing state, that's what we do. And I'm quite stunned by the quality of her vocals in spite of, you know, her challenges. So we can't play live, but we can still do a lot of recording.
Well, I have to tell you, I've always been a huge admirer of Martha and the Muffins and then Eminem and on. I've always admired the fact that, you know, while at the same time, and you kind of alluded to it, that you can put out these pop gems like Echo Beach and then, you know, Cooling the Medium, that sort of thing. But then at the same time, as a fan, you never really knew what you were going to get. You could get something way experimental. So it was always a little surprise every time you opened up a brand new album. And I just want to say thank you for the music for as long as you've been doing it, which I know is quite, kind of a while now. And yeah. And I really hope that health-wise, I know both of you have had health scares, you know, in the years. And I really hope that things progress well for you. And we wish, you know, nothing but the best. So.
That's so nice of you to say.
Yeah,
that's
deeply appreciated, Todd, because, you know, it's a weird business, as you well know. And you know, often artists say, look, if it weren't for the fans, you know, we'd be lost. But it's actually quite true. And, you know, that there have been, you know, real up and down times with this band within the way it works within a business. And really the thing that has kept us going is the kind of support that you just, you know, articulated. So we're in it for the long run. And, you know, part of it is that we know we're being held up by a lot of wonderful people. So thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.